trigger warnings. A lot of universities are debating whether or not to include trigger warnings at the beginnings of classes.
To be clear, trigger warnings for students are defined in the New York Times as explicit alerts that the material they are about to read or see in a classroom might upset them. That can be as broad as violent material, misogynist material, sexist material, and the list goes on.
So the idea is this will trigger a reaction, a traumatic response or emotional response, something like that. Our next guest says, well, we don't actually need new warning label policies. We've got David Perry with us. He's associate professor of history at Dominican University in Illinois. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Well, how widespread are these? I first encountered them on the internet over the last year or so. Are a lot of universities and colleges considering trigger warning policies?
I think so far it's only a handful of universities have gotten to the point of actually drafting policy language, but I think it's fair to say that every university is paying attention to this conversation and thinking about what is this going to mean for us. So yes, it's a big conversation throughout the world of higher education right now.
And you're not on board with the idea. What is the argument against, especially a university-wide policy on trigger warnings?
Right. So I want to say that there's a lot of people who are arguing about this who I think are not understanding what the debate is. Mm-hmm. This is not about people feeling uncomfortable. It's not about people who just don't want to do the reading or who don't like the reading. It's not about political correctness. These are words that are thrown around in the debate. But this is about trauma and how we should deal with it in the classroom. And so people who are for the policy are saying that, I think reasonably, that students who are experiencing a traumatic reaction based on something they're encountering, that they're not going to learn. And so we need these warnings to help students so they don't have to choose between their education and being safe. Critics, like me, I hope also, as sort of a reasonable counterargument, say, first of all, education needs difficult material. We can't sanitize the kinds of things that we teach. But also that it's the nature of trauma, the nature of triggers, is highly personal. And who am I? I'm a history professor. I haven't done psychological evaluations of every one of my students to guess, well, maybe this will be traumatic or that won't be. People can be triggered by such things as, yes, graphic depictions of violence, but also the smell of lavender or the taste of almonds. It could be whatever, a particular kind of window. Anything that that relates to their trauma could be triggering. And so I have some real questions about the practicality of any kind of blanket policy.
The classic use of trigger warnings when I've seen them, especially, again, on the internet, I haven't been in a university classroom in a while, is some kind of depiction or graphic description of sexual assault in particular, possibly triggering a traumatic response from a survivor of sexual assault. Whether it's a university-wide policy or not, is that bad an idea for a professor or someone presenting a material that includes that kind of depiction for some reason to give a heads up?
I don't think it's a bad idea at all. And in fact, I can't imagine teaching a class in which there would be some kind of graphic description of sexual assault or torture or any kind of explicit violence in which I would not have told my students what they were going to encounter. I guess I don't do it because I'm worried about triggers, although I think about it all the time, but because it's just really good teaching that as opposed to in a TV show where you might want to surprise the viewer so that they gasp and say, oh no, I didn't expect that to happen. In the classroom, I say, this is what you're going to read. These are the things I'd like you to think about. These are some of the things you might encounter. Here are some questions to take home with you. And so I think it's a fine idea to tell students what they're going to encounter. And if that helps with trigger issues, which I think it does, that's really good. I actually think you can cover a lot of the bases by just practicing good teaching and preparing your students for the work they're going to do.
Now, you mentioned some of the reaction you've seen from critics worried about political correctness, to saying that, a lot of literature might include material that is racist or sexist, and these trigger warnings could expand to maybe be overprotective of students' exposure to these materials. You're not seeing that happening on campuses, even ones that are considering trigger warnings.
Well, I'm not. And it's always a challenge when you teach material that contains objectionable language or ideas. I teach a lot about medieval violence between Christians and Muslims and Jews, ideas about anti-Semitism, all kinds of things that are deeply objectionable. That's important. These are important things to teach, important to talk about, important to complicate and discuss. No one has ever said, as a Jew or as a Christian or as a Muslim, I'm incapable of having this conversation. That said, if someone's going to sit down and read a story about that's saying something horrible about another group of people, it is worth preparing them for that so they know what the context is. They know what's going on here. They know both that these ideas are objectionable, but also that just because one person from one particular era said something, we don't have to reject everyone else from that era. Or if one author has a character that does something terrible or says something terrible, that doesn't mean we have to simply ascribe those views to the author, that there's complexity here.
Talk a little more about your concept of good teaching to deal with these issues and bring students on board and, I guess, putting these things in context.
Well, all the people who study reading, I teach history, but there are people who spend all their time studying reading. And what they like to talk about is scaffolding, that students read better when they read with a clear purpose, and that when you send them home, or for that matter, if you're showing a film in the middle of class or reading something in class, you want to tell your students this is the goal of the class, that if you just say go home and read chapter one or go home and read the first three acts of Hamlet, you're not actually doing your job as a teacher. You should say, go home and read the first three acts of Hamlet, and here are some of the things you're going to encounter. Here are the things I'd like you to think about. And if there was going to be something that was graphic and shocking in a reading, I would think that would be necessary to prepare them on some level. Otherwise, the students will likely spend all their time being shocked, whether triggered or not, and not thinking about whatever your course themes are, historical content, literary form, whatever it is that you're trying to teach.
And as we mentioned, this is happening at some colleges, some universities, considering having these trigger warning guidelines, policies. If, say, your college put something like this into effect, would that stand in the way of you doing this kind of good teaching, this kind of contextualizing of the material?
My real concern is that it would push us into being risk-averse as teachers. There's a lot of this going on. I link it to the sort of the general corporate pressures on the university and a lot of sort of business language and business speak, which are pushing universities in general to try to avoid lawsuits, to put it bluntly. And surely many administrators who are backing these kinds of policies have the interests of the students in mind. But I do think at least some extent it's an attempt to put warning labels. I write about it as the equivalent of putting on your syllabus, warning, this coffee is hot, so that if you burn yourself, you're not going to get a lawsuit. And that's not, I mean, that looks good, but it's kind of a Band-Aid vague policy that doesn't actually fix anything. And I do worry that then once we've slapped one of these labels on, that then the cases where there are serious cases of trauma, that we might think, well, we've done all we need to do. And I'm not sure that's true either. I'm not sure that, in fact, just saying there's graphic content in this reading is enough for people who are, in fact, sexual assault survivors. Or I've had students who've experienced death in the family during a semester, the semester before, and that these are much more complicated situations than a warning label or a content note can take care of.
We're talking to David Perry. He's an associate professor of history at Dominican University in Illinois. Over this concept of trigger warnings, the idea that, say, a university lecture or a university or college as a whole should warn people about content that might trigger a traumatic response, maybe a strong emotional response. Should this be a policy at schools? It's not all over the place yet, but it's getting a lot of attention in the media and in academia in general.
We're continuing our discussion about trigger warnings with David Perry, Associate Professor of History at Dominican University in Illinois.
And we want to know what you think about the concept. And these trigger warnings would be something like, at the beginning of a class, maybe a warning that some content will depict a sexual assault or maybe a traumatic episode of war that might trigger something for somebody who'd survived one of those two things. Some universities, colleges are being called on by students and others to have blanket policies on trigger warnings. Our guest, David Perry, says, no, we don't need that. There are better ways to teach related to these issues. Want to hear what you think. 800-642-1234. Are you a student? Would you like to see something like this in place at your school, your college, your university? Are you in academia? Good idea? Bad idea? Do you have a question? 800-642-1234, or you can always email us at talk@wpr.org. We'll go right to a caller now. We've got Christine on the line in Platteville. Christine, hi. You're on the air.
Hi.
What did you think about this?
I personally think that including a trigger warning statement in the syllabus or, you know, discussed even in class would be a good thing, because there's so many people in colleges from so many different backgrounds, you know, so many different veterans, people who've been through sexual assault, that can help them prepare themselves mentally before they delve into the book. And I'm not saying necessarily avoiding the book because of it, because sometimes reading through things can help you cope, but it helps get you ready for it or make that decision yourself.
Christine, thanks a lot for that call. David, do you think as an instructor that might make sense?
It will be fine. I mean, I have no objection to that. I worry about, again, when it becomes mandatory policy and the implications of what happens when an administration says these are the things you have to mark out, and they choose, well, these five kinds of different difficult content you've got to label and not five other kinds, exactly for the reason Christine just said, that people come from so many different backgrounds. Making sure students are ready to are preparing themselves mentally for difficult material, I'm absolutely in favor of that. And if there are teachers who aren't doing that, well, then that is an issue. But again, I'm concerned about using a blanket kind of vague policy in order to ensure that happens.
Christine, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Catherine in Dousman now. Catherine, hi there.
Hi, I'm a high school English teacher, and I can't imagine teaching a piece of literature without scaffolding it. I'm agreeing with your guest in that way, that you try to prepare the students for what they may encounter, but at the university level, it's so important to be a critical thinker, and, you know, when you get to college, you're expecting, as a student, to be able to navigate all this and handle this, and it is the professor's responsibility to help you navigate it. And, you know, so many different individuals. So I'm just calling to agree wholeheartedly with the guest that a blanket ruling coming from administration would not be a way to go, especially in a university environment.
And Catherine, as a high school teacher, you mentioned that scaffolding. What's an example of a book that maybe was controversial or could have been offensive or triggering to a student that you scaffolded around?
Well, I used to teach The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn to freshmen. And it uses the N-word quite frequently, and so we put it in the historical context beforehand and did a lot of study of Twain's life and showed how, you know, he was disturbed by slavery and used this character. And, of course, we always gave students the option, if you think that this is not a book that you can read, then you should, you know, we'll find an alternative for you. But the majority of the time, students chose to read the book. And I had one student in American Lit this year who said, you know, I said, do you think that you're going to be bothered? And he said, I'll think about it. He took the book home, came back and said, my mom convinced me I should read the book. So,
all right.
You know.
Catherine, thank you so much for sharing that story. It sounds like she's doing it right, David.
Sounds great to me. You know, the one thing I want to add that we haven't talked about is there is a small percentage of people with, or maybe a larger percentage of people with kind of diagnosed trauma. And the word one word that's been missing from this conversation is the word of disability. PTSD is a disability. Anxiety disorders based on trauma is a disability. And that's a situation where we don't need a new policy because we already have a policy. It's called the American with Disabilities Act. And every university should have means of helping students who really can't encounter certain kinds of things without real breakdowns in the middle of class. This is something that maybe not every university is doing it as well as they could, but we do have these policies based on the ADA, in order to make sure we help students deal with these situations.
But if you're a professor, you don't know that the student in the back row there has PTSD and might need some extra, you know, some extra right. conversation with you.
And it is not only not my job, but I don't mean it as an avoidance.
Mm.
I should not be asking students, can you tell me about your sexual assault or your experience mm-hmm. in Afghanistan, right? We should have confidential, highly trained disability advocates and specialists to work with those students, generate reasonable accommodations, and then bring them to the instructor. And I always say the request for an accommodation should be the beginning of a conversation. It's not, oh, you've given me a piece of paper that these things have to happen. Well, that's when we start talking about it. And it's not that you can just ignore an accommodation, but you can say what's reasonable within the context of this class and have a dialogue. I have never had someone bring an accommodation based on content they could or couldn't encounter. And in fact, in many cases with trauma, as I've been learning, avoidance is not the best therapy for trauma. But we do have these mechanisms, and at many universities, they're wonderful. I'm sure other universities can still work on making those systems more robust and efficient and caring, but we do have them.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Nick on the line in Sussex. Nick, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I guess I just kind of briefly cut in, on you mentioned something about PTSD, and I'm an Army Reservist myself, and so obviously I know plenty of war veterans, and I know PTSD can come about very suddenly and can be very quickly invoked by many things, and especially I know I'm a university student at UWM, and I know a lot of the classes I've taken have pretty graphic war-related material, and I know a lot of there's quite a number of veterans that go to UWM, and we have nothing in place that says, like, hey, there's just nothing in place for, like, warning students that, hey, there could be graphic material, and et cetera, et cetera. So obviously the same goes for sexual assault victims. But I guess there should be something like if they know you're a veteran and you're attending a class, they should warn the student or tell the teacher, hey, you should kind of be conscious of what you're showing. Because even though he might not say he has PTSD, because obviously a lot of PTSD also goes undiagnosed. So who knows when something could be invoked or when the student could have an episode, et cetera, et cetera. And the same goes, like I said, for sexual assault victims who oftentimes won't even, you know, obviously don't report sexual assault. They don't even know that it could be a problem. So, again, there should be something in place saying, I guess like on the syllabus or something, saying if you were a victim of sexual assault or anything traumatic, just feel free to leave the class at any time, no questions asked. Just there should be a lot more accommodation and accessibility and also confidentiality for victims of traumatic events.
Nick, thank you so much. You bring up a lot of issues. One thing I wonder there, David, we've got a lot of veterans in many campuses around the country. Is academia on top of these issues of dealing with PTSD and the needs of veterans?
I think it is an emerging conversation in academia, and I wish we were more ahead of it. I think some universities and some individual faculty, often people from a military background, are way ahead of it. I don't have a military background, but I talk to people who do and learn a lot about it. Some universities are doing wonderful work, have special programs, have special sort of helping veterans navigate their way through higher education kinds of programs, and other universities are a little behind on it. I'd like to see much more of that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Nick. We've got Mark in Appleton on the line now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I also teach. I've had students with PTSD and certainly make accommodations for them. I just wonder, though, whether we're putting the onus on the faculty and on the syllabus instead of making it on the student to be responsible to ask the professor before the class, is there this kind of material, in other words, that it's the student's responsibility to put themselves and keep them out of a situation that might be harmful to them, instead of asking the professor to do it. I just question.
Gotcha, that. Mark. David, it's up to the student to, if they've got a need like that, to make it clear to the professor up front.
Well, I think it would be difficult for me to say to a student, you have to disclose your status as a rape survivor to me. That's not a conversation I think a student should have to have with every faculty member as they move through a university. But again, if we do have robust student services and disability services. And if, as professors, we just teach empathetically and respectfully, and we think about what is our material and who our students are, I do feel that we're going to take care of a lot of these cases before it comes up, and that to some extent students are taking responsibility. It's the students who are driving this conversation, who are asking for these policies, and we need to listen to them. That doesn't mean we have to enact the policy that they're requesting, but we do at least have to be very open to the conversation and thinking about what happens in our classroom.
We'll leave it there. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was David Perry, Associate Professor of History at Dominican University in Illinois.